Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the number one sports podcast in the Metro Detroit area. It's Teeing It Up with C&V, recording a day later than we normally do. So that's sorry for the delay in this week's episode, but it's good to be talking back with the V of C&V. Vladdy, what's going on, man?
Not much. Honestly, another week. What are you going to do? Just kind of hanging around. You have a couple more days of work, and then this upcoming weekend, St. Patrick's Day in Chicago. So I'm very excited for that. But in terms of anything new, I guess there will be can kind of tell an entertaining story quickly for the people. I had to pick up my sister from the airport on Saturday, and there was a little bit of a snafu with flights. And was she going to make an early one? Was she going to make a late one? Whatever it might be. And my sister ended up getting on the early one, and thank God, because I was telling you, the late flight ended up landing at DTW at 3:30. Now, yes. I understand we lost an hour with daylight savings, but driving down to Detroit Metro Airport at 3 a.m. would have been miserable for myself. I would not have been happy. And so I'm very glad she got on the early flight. That's kind of my story of the week, I guess. I know I see you're back at home in a different setting. I haven't seen these little pictures behind you in a while. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Today was tax day for me, so I'm at the rents getting that stuff done and taking care of all that good stuff. Hopefully Uncle Sam gives me a nice mid-spring gift of a tax return here in a couple weeks, but that's kind of all I got. I'm on spring break for school right now, but I'm working a normal week, so it's not like the old days of spring break. Unfortunately, it's a very uneventful one for me.
Sorry to cut you off, but how does it feel to be one of us working a 40-hour week?
I'm actually not working tomorrow, so I'm going to be hitting the course for the first time of the year tomorrow.
Ooh.
I think that's the news in my life. So not working the full 40 hours. I couldn't get myself to do it. I just decided on a normal hours, but I couldn't completely go zero and do nothing the whole week. So I'm partially back, I guess, is the answer.
Gotta pay bills. Gotta pay bills, unfortunately.
Gotta pay bills.
Yeah.
But yeah, we gotta what?
I was gonna say, where are you playing?
Hunter's Ridge in Howell.
Nice.
I'll be interested. It's a relatively tough track, links course. But there's a lot of how do you describe it? Like weedy stuff. They're not actual weeds, but like very easy to lose a ball in that stuff. But I know in early March it's gonna be all dead. So maybe I'll be able to put the ball all over the place and get away with it. We'll see. But yeah, so let's get into the show for today. Probably the biggest topic, I think, in this one is going to be Michigan State basketball.
Yep.
Just another infuriating week for this team. A absolute barn burner, and by barn burner, I mean the opposite of a barn burner. A two-point game, an absolute rock fest against Northwestern. You survived at home on senior night, a game that they probably needed, only for Sunday afternoon, evening to go to Assembly Hall and look horrible in the first half. We're down by as many as 16 to just come all the way back for an absolute dud down the stretch. We're up by 7 at one point with only a couple minutes left and end up blowing another game on the road. So I guess thoughts, the season's over. So regular season, go.
I'll talk about the game specifically because that's how I had them split. I had them split with the good, quote unquote, being a victory and the bad, quote unquote, being a loss, even though they were both terrible in my opinion. That game, if we would have lost, would be called inexplicable just because inexplicable usually prefaces the word loss. But because they won, I guess I'll use the term perplexing. We get to play against just what's left of Northwestern. I think they were missing two or three starters from the team that beat us in Evanston. A team that struggled with turnovers, a team that struggled, that couldn't shoot, a team that couldn't rebound. And here comes Michigan State on senior night, I might add, when they're supposed to kind of have that extra boost. And they couldn't not, let me, I don't even want to say they couldn't put them away. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't buy a basket. They were sitting there jacking up bricks from deep. Like it's
2 for 22.
It was I mean, it was pathetic. I like if I want to sit here and say, you know what, like kudos to them for finally out rebounding a team, but I can't say that. Northwestern played with their tallest dude being 6'7" for most of the game.
You're right.
They couldn't do anything. And I guess the only thing I'll say is the shining moment, if you will, was that 5 to 8 minute stretch at the beginning of the second half where Malik Hall looked like Michael Jordan. And I don't even think I'm exaggerating. He was demanding the ball, his moment on the post, turnaround Jays, whatever Malik Hall wanted to do for that 5 to 8 minute window to start the second half, Malik Hall did. And I was like, whoa. And we started to pull away, and it was like, okay, senior day, the lads will get to kiss the court, it'll be cool. No, not at all. I don't know how they let Northwestern back into that game. I don't know why it was close at all. Like you said, it's a game they had to win, because if they didn't, we'll talk about their kind of current status now, but they would probably be directly in Dayton, if not on the outside looking in, had they lost that game. And I think everyone who listens to this and has heard us talk, they know what we think of this team and where they should be. It is not in agreement with what Joe Lunardi or anyone else thinks we should be, but I guess that's the good from that game, or from the week. And if you want to get to the Indiana performance, or
Yeah,
performance,
the Indiana
performance
performance.
is an overstatement, because performance implies effort, and there was none
Yeah.
of that.
That's the problem I think most people or what I've had is you have just lame duck efforts all year. And I'll call out one guy who I've been so high on that I think I've just been ignorant to recognize how poorly he's played this year and how like, I guess I don't want to call it cancer, but how bad he's been for the program is AJ Hogard, who is a very probably went on. We've seen him put off, like, I think of the tournament game last year against Kansas State, I think, or the Marquette game the week prior. Like, he's had those, or even this year, the Illinois game when he's going to the bucket and decides he wants to make layups. But that can't happen once a season. And I think it would be remiss if we didn't, if like we just glanced over how he, I just can't stand it's really getting old and sick and tired of like the flat. He's the CEO of flexing when he makes one basket down by 12. And it's, there's just no consistent effort. And it's kind of been that for 4 years from this guy. So very frustrating performance there. That's where I think I'll start with that game.
I guess to kind of go on top of that, I guess let's from a you mentioned the effort level, I'll raise you a roster planning. Could you imagine if someone as good as Khalil Ware, who can give you 20 and 10 on any given night, could you imagine if he was available for any team to recruit in the offseason this past year? Could you imagine if you could bring that kind of talent to your squad? I can't. I certainly can't. That would be mischievous. That would be unheralded. You would not believe it if that was crazy. But here we are, former Oregon player Khalil Ware dominates Michigan State's bigs, which they're a joke, and I'll get to them. And wasn't the other guy not Mbaku, the other one? Didn't they weren't two of their big guys transfers? I think they were.
Yeah, I know it's completely different because it's been Trice Jackson Davis the past couple of years. So.
But in any case, this team got absolutely baptized by those big guys, out rebounded, and I've got a fun stat listed here that I'll get back to in a second. Our centers can't handle a basketball, and this includes Xavier Booker. I don't understand how you have four centers and not a single one of them can catch the ball. Like, whether it be a rebound, whether it be a pass, whether it be some kind of tip. They cannot put you. Everyone knows the Taurean Prince's Baylor Yale quote. How does Yale out rebound Baylor? None of our guys have seen that apparently, because they don't know how to put two hands on the ball and come down with it. They just do not. Every single one of them, I've seen them drop these little dump off passes from a driving Hogard or Walker, or get a rebound taken from them like lunch money. It's pathetic. Here's the fun stat. In the last 10 games dating back to the calendar turning from January to February, do you know how many times Michigan State has out-rebounded its opponent in 10 games?
Three times.
Correct. And
Wow.
one of those was the Northwestern game where, like I said, they didn't play with anyone. You and I could have sat there at the four and the five, and we would have out-rebounded that Northwestern team. So I say 2.5 times. That is not the Michigan State of old. I've said that,
Nope.
so I'm not going to continue again. The first 15 minutes of that game, and thank God that Galloway dude got hurt, because if he doesn't go down, we could have lost by 70.
Yeah.
But they were down, what, I think it was 20-5 at one point, or 24-7. They
Yeah.
were not even trying. It was pathetic. Just that performance was atrocious. Then I don't know how they managed to come back. I was honest, I was probably so pissed off that I couldn't see straight, so I don't know how we made it a 5-point game to close the half. And then took the lead, much less. But I don't know, fall in love with the 3-point shot.
Yeah.
Sometimes it falls, and then the rest of the time, as the last 15 minutes of the game went, it doesn't fall. It's just so much of this game is kind of, to me, it's astounding, because it can directly go back to the way Tom Izzo approached the transfer portal. So I have more some more fun stats. So the three Iowa big guys, do you want to guess how many points they put up?
Indiana.
Yeah, Indiana's three big guys. Do you know how many
Okay.
points they put up on us?
37.
No, more.
50.
More.
More. 62.
A little less.
57.
Yes. 57 of the 65 Indiana points were scored by Ngabaku. I'm sorry, I know I'm butchering that name. Khalil Ware. And I think the last guy is Neal, or I forgot his name, but those three big guys, not only were they the only ones who could score, the only ones who tried. We knew exactly what they were going to do on every offensive possession. We could do nothing. Here are the box score stats from the Indiana for shooting for the Indiana players. 6 of 14, 5 of 13, 13 of 19, 0 for 1, 0 for 1, 0 for 4, 1 for 3. Can you guess which three players are the big guys and which three players were guarded by pumpkins?
Ones that took more than three shots.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we can get to Xavier Booker once again not playing in the second half.
Nope.
And you know, I am kind of in a catch 22 predicament about this, because he did get abused in the first game. But that's how you learn. That is how you learn. You will not learn how to play basketball sitting on the bench. And I'm sorry, no amount of weight that somebody can put on in the offseason is going to make you learn how to play basketball either. You have to learn how Big Ten bigs operate. And that is done by letting them cook you if it takes, or just you playing with them. And Izzo just once again gave him, let him start, gave him some run in the first half, second half. Nah, let's put Mati Sissoko, who is quickly playing his way. I said he belongs in Kalamazoo in the MAC. That is generous for Mati Sissoko at this point.
Generous, generous. I agree with the catch 22 with Xavier Booker. For me, I've been very hard on him this entire year because it's one of the rare things I do agree with Izzo. He is very raw and very not ready to take that step. But you're right, at this point, you've seen a full season of Carson Cooper just not be able to catch a ball that's not right in his hands. You've seen 4 years. Three of them, two of them starting for Mati Sissoko. What else can you even justify? And not right now, the last couple games, especially on Sunday, was Jackson Kohler down the stretch. So now you have more faith in a guy who has played about 10, a third of the season this year, coming off getting breaking his foot and getting foot surgery in the summer, than you do in a 4 year senior. Or a sophomore that you've played all year over this kid. It's just it's one of those things where, as far as how he's handled it, like how much can you criticize it when they all suck? Like the coach just can't be like he can't control how bad they suck. The problem is you created that problem for yourself by refusing to embrace the transfer portal, by refusing to develop Xavier Booker all summer and instead, or in November and December, and not playing him at all in some of those early Big Ten games. You refused to do all that. And so it is your fault. It is your fault at this point. And I think my biggest problem on this team before we move on and talk about the rest of the season, what that has in store for them. Did you see them on Twitter today?
The players or what?
The players
I have not seen anything about the players, no.
were complaining and like chirping the Big Ten because none of them got first team. Tyson Walker was second team. AJ Hogard and Malik Hall were honorable mentions. And like you had Trey Holloman tweeting like that's a snub. And Malik Hall was like, okay, he tweeted like okay bet to it, finding out he only made honorable mention. It's like this team is ridiculous.
Yeah,
Like
that's
they don't even know how bad they are. Like how can you repeatedly lose games and still be that ignorant?
one where I kind of wish I would have seen it in the moment because my trigger fingers definitely would have logged on to Twitter and said, "Dog, I love you. Actually, I don't love you, but you're 8-8, or you're the 8th seed in the Big Ten, 500 in the worst Big Ten of our adult lives." And to be completely frank, you're not even assured of a bit of an NCAA tournament run. I don't think you should care who the coaches or media elected to these fraudulent teams because you know what? You're probably right. It might be a snub, but at least why don't you spend that energy over the course of a season winning games?
Yeah.
I'm kind of annoyed that you told me this because like that I can feel my blood pressure rising right now. That's pathetic from those kids, and they're not even kids. Those guys are 24.
Yeah. Yeah. They're
They're all
all, that's a
seventh-year
group.
seniors.
Yeah. It's just the group that hasn't, it's the first real Izzo group where you've seen over 4 years, just no progression. And I think Izzo is kind of at a loss at this point for that group.
Yeah,
As far as the rest of the season goes, I know we mentioned Lenardi now has them as a 10 seed, or they're the last four in, not getting a bye. So I guess that would be the next to last four in.
I think it's first four buys, whatever they call them,
Yeah.
or I don't know,
Last
but
four buys, I think, something
yeah,
like that.
that
A
sounds
10
about right.
seed, a 10 seed. I don't know. For me, I think you beat Minnesota, you're in for sure, just the way it's
Yep,
gone
absolutely.
all year. I think you lose and you probably should be out, but probably we'll have to wait and see based on what other teams do.
Yeah, I agree. The winning against Minnesota definitely puts you in, but it's almost one of those we talk about catch 22s. Beating Minnesota and losing to Purdue probably sticks you as a 9 seed. And we know what awaits a 9 seed in the second round. We've talked about it. There are three teams in America that are head and shoulders above everybody else. And when you are a 9 seed, you are almost certainly going to play one of them. Now, I don't
Yeah.
know how it works with Purdue because we are obviously in the same conference. I don't know if there's any stupid rules that like they try not to set schedule you, but at the same time, I don't think that matters. I have memories of us playing Minnesota in the 2019 Big Ten tournament about when they went on their final, or in the 2019 NCAA tournament when we went on our little Final Four run. So I don't think there's necessarily rules against it, but I feel like they would probably try and not to not give us Purdue just because they already play each other often. So,
Agreed.
you're looking at a 66% shot of playing either UConn or
Houston.
Houston, which are probably both better than Purdue. Also, I'm sitting here talking about the second round. We might not even be in the second round. So
Yeah.
maybe I gotta bring it back a little bit. Let's say 3 steps and back to this Minnesota game. It is effectively a home game for Minnesota. It's in Minneapolis. Thankfully, it is going to be at 11 a.m. on a Thursday, so a lot of people will be at work. And maybe
Yep.
they won't be able to get the true fan support of a home game, quote unquote. But I have little, I don't want to say interest, or maybe I'm almost rooting for them to lose. If that keeps us out of the 8-9 seed line. Like if you told me you'll lose the game, you'll drop down to to one of the last 10 seeds, or God forbid, even a Dayton game. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, the playing game would be interesting. It's just like I don't trust this team to be consistent enough to win that extra game. But like you would be playing an 11 and then a 6v11 and then a 3 seed, which would bode much well matchup wise for
Kind
Stata's
of assumes the
posting.
3 seed gets there.
Right.
Those guys lose very often these days.
Right.
again, all of that's kind of like neither here nor there. They've put themselves in a position where, like you say, if they lose to Minnesota, it will be a very uncomfortable Sunday. You will be hoping to God an Indiana or an Iowa. First of all, how the hell does Iowa, how is Iowa 6 spots behind us when they beat us on our own court, are ranked higher than us in the Big Ten, and we have the same record?
I don't, well, that's another thing I is that I think there's only five Big Ten teams in the tournament right now, and we're the 8th seed in the Big Ten tournament, and somehow one of those five teams.
That, I mean, I don't get it.
I
I
think it's
guess.
Northwestern, Nebraska, Purdue, us, and Wisconsin. And
Yeah,
Illinois, six.
I don't get it. I've stopped trying to comprehend why it matters. Like, because again, we've always said this glazing of the net ranking, like it's somehow the end all be all, is besides me. At some point, you got to win a game. I understand Michigan State schedules a very hard non-conference every year, but quite frankly, I don't care if you schedule the KD Warriors, followed by the 92 Dream Team, followed by the Avengers in a back to back to back. You got to win some games. 18 and 13 does not cut it in the worst Big Ten of everyone's adult life. In it's, I don't know. I it's incredibly it's insulting. Team's a joke. What are you gonna? I'm done talking about this. I'm gonna get too upset.
So 18 and 14, right? That you got it. You would have to think that's one of the worst teams to have ever. Hold on, because I just want
Well,
to
if you
pull
want
up.
to find out what the actual worst team to ever make a tournament was, just go look at our 2021 team. Weren't they
Right. So that's
17
what
and
I'm pulling
15?
up. I'm trying to pull up what that record was,
I thought they
because I
were
want to say
17 and.
that team was 15 and 12.
Okay.
And they want lost their tournament game, so 15 and 13. They were 9 and 11 in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, I've come to terms with the fact that we're gonna get in because of that SEC football bias and kind of the brand name. They're gonna put us in because of the logo and the name, just so they can get a few extra dollars. But this team, especially if they lose to Minnesota, has no business being there. End
Yeah.
of.
Good luck to the Spartans on Thursday.
Yeah. So from one basketball joke to another, over the weekend, Troy Weaver became an internet sensation when videos surfaced of an altercation with a fan, where the fan tells him some things such as "you suck at your job," and Troy Weaver says, "I'm gonna beat your ass," or "you're lucky I don't beat your ass," which that's funny. Now, I obviously, for those listening who may or may not know, that is someone that I went to school with. That is someone I would consider a friend. Back in the old days, obviously, I've kind of lost touch over the years, but I did talk to him a bit, reach out to kind of get an idea of what went on, because obviously the camera only tells the story of what happened when the camera was on. It doesn't show what happened before or after. So I did want to try and just get an idea of, like, hey man, like, is that really all you said? Because it's like, if that's the case, there's nothing personal there. There's nothing vulgar there. If
No.
you've got a grown man threatening another grown man because he said you suck at your job, you probably suck at your job, and you know it
Yeah.
too, because you would not get that defensive if you didn't know it. If someone said, "Brad Holmes, you suck at your job," he'd probably smirk at him like, "Oh, yeah, you know, you're funny, kid." Like, ha ha. If you're gonna threaten another man, you probably suck at your job. And you know what? He does suck at his job. He is, I think, one of the three or four worst general managers in American sports history by team's win-loss record. He's a joke. And I don't know. I thought it was hilarious. I'll kind of let you get some thoughts on it. I don't think we need to give too much time to this, because I feel like there's only so many ways to look at it, but.
Yeah, it's just indicative of what is the season, and I know that they're no longer in dead last because there's another historically bad team in this league, but it's just so indicative of what this season has been with this roster, and to have your GM yelling at fans is just. I also like, maybe I read the video wrong, but like, why was he like in the stands?
I don't know if they were maybe somewhere close to some kind of
Sweet. I
Yeah,
know the
special
Sweet
box or
Tough
something. Because
fans.
it looked like there was a little railing and it looked like it was like designed or something. I don't know, but you're right. Maybe not. This is probably not what you intended by why is he in the stands, like more of a why isn't he like Steve Yzerman in the
Way,
rafters,
way
just
up there. Yeah.
hiding and like watching like this with like little binoculars.
Yeah.
Why is he in public? He
Right.
should not leave his house. He should have everything DoorDashed to his house under a false name. He should not be seen anywhere. It's hilarious. And the other thing that was funny was if you've ever seen some of his press conferences when he talks to the media and he's super calm and quiet and it's almost like he's got, I don't know if he has like a stutter or if he's trying to think of what to say. He didn't look like he had a stutter there. He was ready to go.
What years we're in year four of Weaver,
Yeah, this is
correct?
year four of Troy Weaver.
So how I know and I know ownership and their lack of caring whether this franchise is ever confident is an issue, but how much longer can you like let this go?
I actually think they can go forever because they would have fired him at this point if they wanted to. Obviously, the next step is kind of an Oakland A's thing where you need the fans to get to a point where they are too rambunctious and basically you're leading your own protest and you stop going. That
Yeah.
the only way you'll ever get it through Tom Gores' head that that Troy Weaver's not the guy is the second his triple bottom line starts taking a hit. The second he
And
stops selling family four packs
yeah.
of hot dogs and Sprites and all that bullshit. That's when he'll know that Troy Weaver's not the guy because he doesn't care. And I'm not fully in tune to this part. I know there's Arntell and a bunch of it's kind of like the United States Ryder Cup team. It's kind of a boys' club with the Detroit
Yeah.
Pistons and a lot of kind of doing favors for family and for player agents. And I know some of the buyouts we did were kind of weird because there was agents of a cousin of a brother of Arntell and Tom Gores. And it's like, what kind of mafia are we running? Not a very successful one, apparently, but here we are.
I guess the only other thought I have is the Pistons are, I think they're getting away with some of what they have the last year because of the buzz around like the Red Wings right now and that they play at the same time. And as much as maybe I'm somewhat biased because I am more of an NHL fan than NBA, when the Red Wings are good, it's a much more passionate fan base than I think maybe Detroit is for other sports. Obviously, the NFL can't compare to anything, I think, but I think the Red Wings, I guess, incline and kind of the buzz around them has taken the heat, the emotional heat off of the incompetence that the Pistons have been. Maybe not like, maybe that might be an overstretch, but I think there is something to that.
I would agree with that. I think with fans spending more of their energy and maybe more of their time and money on the Detroit Red Wings, there's less reserve for kind of caring and getting upset about the Pistons. And I think the other thing with the Pistons is it's kind of the length of how long like they've been putrid for 16 years. That's beyond bad stretches. That is apathy levels. That is one of those where I mean I've said I believe that if a 30th team comes to Las Vegas and it is not an expansion, it is just a relocation, that the Detroit Pistons will be at the top of that list because that's what they've done to the city, that's what they've done to the fan base. I don't think the NBA would miss it much. They would probably find more economic success in Vegas. And I think that's just what happens. When you're that bad for that long and you're not the NFL, you won't survive. You're gonna be the Se you'll be the Seattle Supersonics.
I guess moving on to another team who's having their own struggles that we just mentioned, the Detroit Red Wings, in the midst of a 5-game losing streak where they have a 7-2 loss to Colorado in there, a 4-0 loss to one of the worst teams in the league, the Arizona Coyotes in there. They got bullied 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago now against Florida on our home ice 4-0, and then lost to Vegas this Saturday 5-3. It's been the curse of the priority advertisement logo for them and the curse of Dylan Larkin since that logo has gone on. I know I said it last week. They've now lost 5 games. They've lost their captain, and they play tonight to kind of get off the schneid. They need it quickly. They at one point had an 8-point lead for that second wild card spot. They are now tied for that second wild card spot with the New York Islanders.
I thought they were out of it. I thought the Islanders
The
were ahead.
Islanders lost last night, so now they have the same amount of We have the same amount of games played now. They had a game in hand
Okay.
with the same amount of points, so they lost last night, so now we're tied.
Okay, I see.
And it looks like I think the only other thing I have to add is I think there's some frustration, at least with me, in the trade deadline this past Friday. The Red Wings didn't make any moves, which I'm not necessarily so infuriated at. Like maybe I was with the Lions this past year, or we were with the Lions. The only move they made is moving Clem Costin, who's making $2 million, which is, believe it or not, something in the NHL salary cap. So they moved him to clear cap space because he was getting healthy scratched most games. But it's more everybody around you got better. The other wild card team, the Tampa Bay Lightning, they added multiple pieces. The Florida Panthers, the Bruins, and the Leafs, the other three teams in a playoff spot in your division, all made moves to get better, and you didn't. And I think people are going to sit there and look like, well, why didn't we make the playoffs this year? And it's not so much that we needed to make a move. It's more that everyone else did, and you kind of like looked at yourself like you were going to be better than these teams that got better when you didn't make a move to do that. So we'll see how the rest of the season plays off. They need to get back going. I know that that line of Kane and DeBrincat has cooled off massively since Dylan Larkin's absence. I'm not sure 100% what the timetable is for him. I know he's out tonight again. So dark, dark days in Detroit sports, I guess, as the Red Wings look to climb their way out of this playoff spot for the seventh straight season.
Yeah, I mean, just not just dark, dark days. I mean, for me, it's a lot of GMs that just sit on their hands. Obviously, maybe people might be expecting some NFL free agency stuff, given that kind of the tampering period opened yesterday, and there's been a ton of news and a ton of people going around. That'll be talked about next week when kind of the dust settles and maybe more and more people have actually kind of gotten to their final spot. But that's just something that I know didn't get mentioned, and I know people might be thinking, oh, well, you guys went a day later. Why not talk about it? We'll get to it next week.
So the final topic today is our history topic, as I like to call it, now that the football season's over. We're going to go through the legacies of kind of the big three dogs that are leaving the game of football this year. Pete Carroll, I almost said Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and Nick Saban at Alabama. I guess let's start with Carroll, because I guess I have the least amount to say to him personally. Obviously, he's not quite in that goat category, as I think the other two clearly are. Definitely doesn't have the accolades to do it, but he did it at both levels. I know the USC one is has question marks around it now, I guess. Is it vacated officially?
I think, well, I mean, he had two, and I think they only vacated one.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, for me with Pete Carroll, I had the least amount to say for him, and I think a lot of that is just because I feel like those USC days were probably his like kind of peak years, and obviously we were 4 or 5 and 6 at the
Yeah.
time, so we're not gonna be able to sit here and recall some of what we saw. But I guess the one thing I've always found interesting, and maybe this is something I need to do because I'm a nerd and I would enjoy it, was there's always been like the stories of how Pete Carroll was kind of tuned in with the NCAA investigation of USC, and he was always one step ahead. And as soon as the hammer was going to come down, he's like, "Oh, I'm going back to the pros."
Yeah.
I've always wanted to think. I don't know if there's documentaries or what can be seen about this, but I'd love to kind of learn more about it. You mentioned success at both levels. He's one of only three coaches in the history of football to win both a Super Bowl and an NCAA championship, which is a very big testament to
Wow.
adaptability. Obviously, we know it's the same sport, but it is a different approach. It is you're dealing with different human beings, you're dealing with different kind of structures. Obviously, the NFL designed for parity, college football not. In college, you have to recruit kids, and you are dealing with kids. The NFL, you get to kind of draft them. There's a little bit less kind of maintenance, if you will, and you're dealing with men, so you have to find different ways to motivate both groups. So to me, being able to do both of that's incredibly impressive. I mean, if you want to talk about the Seattle teams, though, I mean, those are so consistently good, going from Beast Quake to the Legion of Boom to kind of the Moonball Russ. And even though they only got it done once, still got it done, made a second Super Bowl. You know, it was incredible. And for me, I think that the Pete Carroll thing was funny because you had no idea it was coming. Not a single person in the world could have said, yeah, we think the Seattle Seahawks job is going to be open. If you asked anyone 4 months ago, they told you you're lying. But it happened. All three guys kind of dipped within 24 hours of each other, which is really crazy because it was just one, two, three. And I know you kind of thought Belichick was on his way out, but the other two, wild.
I guess that'll go into Nick Saban then, because I seven national championships. There's a reason why I guess our generation of watching football, the saying is we want Bama. You can say it's been we want Georgia for the last couple of years, but it's we want Bama, and it's been we want Bama for over a decade now. And I think that's the most impressive part of Nick Saban, is just the continued success he had since he got there in 2007 or 2008, whatever year it is,
The seven.
seven. Because I was looking at other coaches and other names kind of in college football, and that's not really how, I mean, you think of in college basketball, you have Tom Izzo, who's done it for 30 years. You had Coach K, who was there for 40 years. Roy Williams did it at Kansas and UNC for, well, 15 plus years at each spot. Calipari's been at Kentucky now for over a decade. You don't really, especially in our generation, think of any other names that have been there that long at one school getting it done. Now, I know he, I guess it started with the LSU days, because that's where he won first. But, when you think of Nick Saban, you think of Alabama. And I think it's, he's also, I think he did it perfectly in talking about how he left, and now kind of all the stuff he's saying of how just drastic these NIL conversations were, and how different he found these conversations that he was having with players now, as opposed to, pre-NIL 2, 3 years ago. And I think he got out at just the right time and realized that right when his message was kind of starting to not mean what it meant anymore, that he got out of there before, it really could have gone, the other way for him, or like it could be going for like guys like, I don't know, Tom Izzo.
You make a great point. There's kind of the you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Obviously, he did not go out on top 3 years without winning a national title, and we say that, and maybe it's a testament. That was actually the longest drought he ever had at Alabama, was 3 years. He still went out on a very high note. Rose Bowl appearance at the college football playoff, couldn't get it done. And like you mentioned, kind of the lack of resonance with the younger crowd. And he's like, all right, this is not for me anymore. We'll let the young guys take over. And honestly, that's like maybe a kudos there of like acknowledging that it's just not your thing anymore. And that's okay. So many others have done it. So I acknowledge everything about him. Just for me, I kind of had a list of accolades and some other stuff. The greatest coach or the greatest college football coach in history, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Seven-time champion more than anyone else. The first and I believe only head coach to ever win two national titles at different schools. Or I phrased that the wrong way. He's the only head coach to win national titles at two different schools. So
I
it's
did not know that.
not two at two different schools, but just winning a national title at different schools as head coach, obviously. He's only one of two coaches, Bear Bryant, obviously, to win an SEC title at multiple schools, a behemoth coaching tree of studs. And for me, I know you mentioned kind of the we want Bama. I kind of took it a step further. A sensational human being. I mean, you look back at some of the quotes, and obviously there were some funny ones that were kind of more of an annoyance with the media, like the rat poison and the I'm not going to tell you who's starting, so quit asking. You obviously had those, but you also had kind of he was always willing to give people a second chance. Steve Sarkisian currently has a job because of him. Bill O'Brien probably has a job because of him right now. Lane Kiffin
Wayne Kiffin,
probably has a job because of him. And the same thing was said. I don't know if you've definitely seen it. It's the one press conference where he's talking and he gets up there and he starts attacking basically the media in the world for trying to tear down 19-year-old kids. He's like, everyone loves tearing these kids apart when they make a mistake. Everyone loves piling on a 19-year-old. There's not enough people asking, it's okay, let's kind of move past it, let's give you a second chance. he goes on, obviously, in that, and he kind of gives an example of a guy he had 25 years ago who did something stupid. They gave him a second chance, and now he's a successful human being. I think that's one of those things where for Nick Saban, I think there's a little bit more. There's no scumbaggery to him. There was never, to me, you mentioned kind of your the most impressive thing for me wasn't the dominance. There is not a single ounce of evidence ever. And obviously, this can change that he cheated. He was that good for that long organically. Obviously, I will be the first person to change my opinion should something ever come out, but there's no smoke. There's no Spygate. There's no Connor Stallions on the sideline. The only accusations of people saying he was cheating were fans of the other teams after he beat them saying, "Well, that's not fair. He's paying the players. He beat me." No, he was just better than you for 15 years. I mean, we saw it in 2015. I call it a performance, but Michigan, you lose 38 to nothing in the college football playoff. What are you doing there? He was incredible. The NFL factory, just there was never a rebuild. It was always reloading. I think he's the most impressive coach of any sport that I've ever seen. And this is kind of, I didn't have this written down anywhere, so maybe I'm missing something like right off the top of my head, but to me, he's the most impressive coach I've ever seen. Everything about him was impeccable.
I would agree.
It's incredible what he did.
I think you bring up a good point with the, I guess, the culture that he really built there too, with not having the scandals. The one quote I always think of was, I believe it was 2 years ago. It was Bryce Young's Heisman year when he like was like, okay, sit down. Like they were about to leave the interview, and he's like, okay, sit down. And he said something along the lines of like, I'm not mad at these guys. Like these guys played for it. Like they lost this game, but like they gave forth that effort. And you gotta, I also always think of this video that's on YouTube. You can look it up if you're watching, of him. I think it was an ESPN thing that they did, and it was him and how he has all the freshmen out every year to like obviously his absurd cottage property, and he's this big boat, and he's taking all these kids from all over the country, from all different backgrounds, like tubing, and just like he has a smile on his face, and it's like the most like favorite thing he'll do all summer, as opposed, and then you get him out in practice the next day, and just the level of excellence that he demanded is just something that you don't necessarily see in this age anymore. I feel like I'm an old man like barking at a tree for saying that now, but it is becoming more and more rare, especially in college sports these days.
There's nothing more I can say about him. I've said what I said. Moving on to Bill Belichick, kind of the third of the big three that took a walk this past January. Greatest NFL coach of all time. I think his status, and I tried to defend him for a while post Brady, but I do think some of his status kind of took a hit with Brady winning another Super Bowl and him playing musical chairs and seemingly losing his mind at the end of at the end of his New York or New York at New England days. I will say though, I don't want to focus on the good here because this is kind of talk or I don't want to focus on the bad. This is more of a celebration of what these people did kind of for sports and kind of how we watched them. He is head and shoulders above everyone else, in my opinion, is kind of all-time coaching status. Maybe Andy Reid, if he decides to chase him, could maybe make a run at him. But right
I
now, it's
think I
just.
saw though he would need like 7 to 10 years still of what he's almost like 100 losses away.
Then there's multiple. I mean, if Andy Reid goes on a five-peat, obviously he's got Patrick Mahomes, but that's something Bill never did. So I think there's different ways to get there. It's just. I think when you talk about what he's done, obviously in the wins, the everything that kind of went around it, he is kind of so far ahead of everyone. To talk about, I mean, the greatest defensive mastermind of all time for a period of 22 years, he put up consistent top 10 defenses. And I was looking at the rankings. I told you a little bit before we started. I lied a little bit. The worst ranked defense he ever had in points per game in 22 years was 17th. So average. Directly league average was the worst he ever did. Everything else was always good to great to best. I was telling you a little bit as well, and this to me is kind of maybe the most impressive thing about Bill was his approach to kind of looking at a player, it was always, how can we use your talents to benefit our team? Whereas other teams kind of look at a player and say, how can we adapt you into our system? And I think that it's almost kind of a putting the cart before the horse type thing, where Belichick, I think, did it in the best possible way. And that's why you saw so many former Patriots who would go on to leave on big money contracts, and they would just stink because they went into situations where they were not able to get the best out of them. You
Yeah.
had, I mean, same thing happened with coaches. I mean, it was just, there was always kind of that running joke, I think, especially kind of as we got to the mid to late teen or tens. It was always like the, if New England's letting a player go, he's probably cooked. Don't touch him. And it kind of then, I mean, we saw firsthand with the coaching thing as well. If New England's letting a coach go become a head coach, don't hire him. We saw
Right.
how bad that goes when these guys go out there and try and mimic Bill Belichick, even though they're not.
So do
Every.
you, I have a question with that one. Do you think that speaks more to his excellence? Because we mentioned how Nick Saban was such a revolving door for like being a every bit of coaching farm as he was an NFL factory. Like, do you think, but like obviously not the same thing with Belichick, with I think at least recently a lot of those pieces kind of failing as head coaches. Specifically, I think of McDaniels and Patricia. Maybe I'm missing someone who was successful. Bill O'Brien hasn't exactly had a ton of success in the NFL.
I mean, there's Joe Judge. He was a pathetic joke.
So I guess because I could take that to like two different ways. I think you could take that as, oh, it was all Belichick, and or you could take that as just like, oh, well, he just wasn't the coaching farm that maybe other coaches have been.
Well, I think those two things kind of tie into each other. And that might be once again part of the, even for the coaches, he found ways to utilize them. And maybe at the end of the day, he held so much of that secret sauce that made the New England Patriots work for so long that when other teams tried to get a little bit of recipe for it, they found out that there was a dude walking around with a blank piece of paper and was like, hey, look, I'm a New England guy. I'll replicate Bill Belichick. And it's like, well, yeah, what do you know about how to replicate it? And they're like, well, I don't know. I don't know. I think. I know what you're trying to say. I just think that it did still kind of go back to kind of what Belichick was able to do himself and kind of how he was able to, I don't want to say use people because that has a negative connotation, but how he was able to just put
Get the
so
best
many
out of people.
people and get the best out of them. And obviously Brady was there and that it is a team sport. If this was tennis, we'd having different conversations, but just the way the Patriots ran the league for 2 decades. You always had the running joke. Well, the Patriots season doesn't start until the AFC title game, and that's kind of become the Chiefs now. It's crazy. For me, I guess to kind of bring it all back together, if I had to maybe, I don't want to say rank the three guys, but if I had to sit there and maybe put the distinguishing factor of why I'd put Saban ahead of Belichick when you look at this, Belichick did have cheating scandals. There was Spygate. There was Deflategate. There was a loss of picks. There was repercussions for some of the things they did. Nothing with Alabama. So obviously, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like this somehow taints his legacy. I'm just going to sit here and say when I'm asked if I'm asked to differentiate between Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, I mean, similar. Obviously, 6 Super Bowl, 7 NCAA championships is just Nick Saban. There's no smoke. There's no smoke with him. It is obviously, like I said, it can change. But until that happens, Nick Saban did everything by the book, and that to me is kind of the differentiating factor.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'll add with Belichick is just so, and I know Brady was there for nearly all of it, so it's like there is always that. And you mentioned the effect that how that ended once Brady left, but to just be so good in like different eras, like their first couple Super Bowls were over 20 years ago now. So and to still be relevant, and I'm obviously the last couple of years haven't been the same Patriots, but to be go through that many eras of football and that many different groups, I don't, again, is that a Tom Brady or a Belichick thing? You could debate that all day, but I think that's the distinguishing thing for me with Belichick is how he was able to do that in like totally different football games when you look at maybe the first Super Bowl to the six, as far as how the game had changed and how many different groups of players and coaches he had to go through, which I think is arguably harder to do in the NFL when you have a salary cap and you have to draft players and you don't get to just recruit the best players once you build that culture, like sometimes in college. I'm still putting Saban ahead of Belichick,
Agreed.
but that's what I'll say to for Belichick's sake.
Yeah, I know this was kind of a ragtag discussion, something where we didn't necessarily, I mean, maybe didn't necessarily plan on doing this for the longest time, the way we have with some other stuff. It was just for me, kind of. I looked back and I was like, you know what? These are 2.5, because like I said, Carroll was kind of, we missed the glory years of Pete Carroll running an entire sport the way the other two did. But for those 2.5 people, those three human beings, they ran sports that we were very passionate about for an incredibly long time. And I enjoyed looking back at it, seeing some of the accomplishments, maybe seeing just how kind of unique they were. So to those who made it this far, I don't really have much to add. I guess before we kind of say our goodbyes, if you have something else,
No, I just it with all three of those names, it's so interesting because at this point in our lives, it's kind of the first group of greatness coaches you got to see play out, and then
Yep.
now see lead your sport as the staple they've been for your entire life. It's just a weird feeling. So I think it is worth talking about, as opposed to like maybe some of the other ones that I can think of off the top of my head were either guys that were done before us or were done very early in my life that I didn't get to see. And those are kind of three names that all happened at once that are going to change, the way I see the sport now. So,
Yeah.
but for those of you, like Vladdy said, for those of you guys who are still listening and made it this far into this circle of glory kind of. I feel like we just gave them Hall of Fame speeches, but maybe they should hire us for that. But
We're out there giving them their yellow gold jackets.
yeah, we appreciate you guys listening. I don't have anything else, so you want to end this one?
No, like I said, thank you very much for making it through. Obviously, next week will be a fun one talking about free agency, maybe yelling a little bit about Brad Holmes sitting on his hands again, but that's not, that we'll get that in, you'll get that in 6 days' time.
And we'll have a tournament preview, so
Oh,
it'll be
I
a big
forgot. Yeah, by
episode.
that time the bracket will be finalized. We'll n next week will be fun. Next week will be
Yeah.
fun. All right, thank you
Thanks for
very
tuning in,
much,
guys.
and we will see you all next week.